Hi, this is Harlem, and welcome to the Fresh Ubuntu podcast. This week is going to be slightly different from what you are normally used to. Of course, we have all the segments in place. However, Peter and I were not able to get together this week at our main headquarters here at the Fresh Ubuntu Network. But he did get a chance to get into the Vermont Bureau of the Fresh Ubuntu Network, quote unquote. And he was able to do the news by himself, and I think he did just a wonderful job. So we got Peter at the Vermont Bureau, quote-unquote, doing the news. And also this week, I have a wonderful interview with a gentleman named Chad Wallenberg, who does the Linux Basement podcast, wonderful podcast about open source stuff, about Ubuntu, about, you know, all the fun things going on in open source. So we got that interview as well. And we just can't get enough of the Asus EEE PC. And so we have Nightwise joining us this week. Thank you very much, Nightwise, for sending us that beautifully produced, wonderful review of the Asus EEE PC. And of course, Nightwise is in our Belgium Bureau of the Fresh Ubuntu Network. And so anyway, we also have a Man Page Minute this week, and I think that's going to cover everything. So thank you for joining me. Enjoy the rest of the show, and I'll talk to you later at the end. Oh, and one last thing. The music was provided by a gentleman named Scott, a friend of Peter's and fellow co-worker of Peter's as well. Thank you very much, Scott, for sending us that clip. Listeners, if you like it, send me some feedback, please, at harlem@freshubuntu.org. And if not, well, we can go back to the drawing board. He says that he has other samples for us to have a listen to also. So anyway, keeping with the ever-changing, different theme every week kind of show, again, we show up with yet another theme this week. And so as I sit here with my wife today, I'm sitting on our bedroom bed, and we are watching Chocolat, she says, chick flick. So anyway, I gotta go, and I will talk to you all once again very soon. Bye-bye. Enjoy the show. Bye.
Hey everyone, this is Peter, and I'm here with your news segment this week. As you may recall, I was not able to make it to last week's episode just because I was a dog. And this week, I've just been really, really busy with work, so unfortunately I wasn't able to participate in the two interviews that Harlem conducted, but next week I plan to be back, so don't worry. In the meantime, I have the news segment for this weekend last, so let's get right into it. I guess the biggest news of the week is the announcement of the new version of Ubuntu, which is going to be coming out after Hardy Heron. It has a name now, Intrepid Ibex. Yes, the next version of Ubuntu will be a mountain goat. Mark Shuttleworth sent an email out to the Ubuntu lists, the developers lists, and he says that this is the new version planned for October 2008. So this will be version 8.10. And a couple of other things, among other things, he says, a particular focus for us will be pervasive internet access, the ability to tap into bandwidth wherever and whenever you happen to be. No longer will you need to be tethered, domesticated. You'll be able to roam like a mountain goat, etc. Interesting. Very interesting. I don't know what this means. Anyway, the Intrepid Ibex conference will be taking place, the Ubuntu Developer Summit. Remember last year they had one for Hardy. It was in Boston, Massachusetts. This one will be in the Czech Republic from the 19th to the 23rd of May, 2008. So we'll have a link in the show notes, and if you're interested, go and check it out. Intrepid Ibex, the new version of Ubuntu. Mythbuntu Alpha version 2, 8.04, has been released. This is the Ubuntu-based distribution, which features MythTV, and it is out. It's in alpha stage right now, built on Hardy Heron. So if you are you want to be on the bleeding edge when Hardy comes out, and you're into the whole running your television and recording, turning your Linux box, your Ubuntu box, into a PVR, you might want to check out Mythbuntu. Also released last week, Debian GNU Linux version 4.0 R3. This is the third update to Debian 4.0, mainly adding corrections and security problems to the stable release. Remember that Ubuntu comes from Debian, so Debian is the father of Ubuntu, if you will. And we always like to give a nod to the guys over at the Debian project and applaud the work that they're doing, which makes Ubuntu and all the other Debian and Ubuntu-based distros possible. Also recently released, And Linux, over at andlinux.org, andlinux.org. And Linux came out with a new version a couple of weeks ago. We didn't get to cover it then. And Linux is an interesting little thing. I think I'm going to be playing with it soon. It's a complete Ubuntu Linux, which runs seamlessly under Win32 applications. It's based on a project called CoLinux, which I originally found a couple years ago. That was a way to install Gentoo Linux under Windows. Now, this is not the same as, for instance, the Wubi installer. It actually does some really interesting things to integrate Windows and Linux. So it takes an existing Windows installation, and it gives you a fully functional Linux. I'll go down the feature list really quickly. It says what you will get from their website. You will get a fully functioning Linux system, however, without the usual desktop, because you've already got one from Windows. You will get a second panel at the top of your Windows desktop, or a second start menu in the system tray from which you can start all of your Linux apps. You get Linux applications and Windows apps that can be used simultaneously, and you can cut and paste between them. And you get apt and Synaptic to install your further apps. What you will not get, another desktop. All right, so you don't get GNOME or KDE or XFCE or something on top of what you've got. You don't get the bench of applications that usually ships with Linux distributions, so you have to fetch stuff. So just doing your install, for instance, you're not going to get gedit or kate or conqueror or Firefox. You have to install those separately. Apparently it does not yet include a printer driver, but other than that, it's got some pretty cool features. So I definitely plan on checking that out and probably do a little tech segment on that. So, also in the news in the Ubuntu-related column, Mozilla Messaging was announced this week. Mozilla Messaging, formerly known as Mailco, formerly known as the redheaded stepchild of the Mozilla Foundation, yes. Thunderbird, the Thunderbird project, is going to now be under the umbrella of Mozilla Messaging. You can read all about it at mozillamessaging.com. And basically, this is the spin-off from the Firefox browser, Thunderbird mail client, and a spin-off of the Mozilla Foundation. The idea was that this is going to be the project that's generating Thunderbird coming soon. Recent news has not been good, not been encouraging. I'm really concerned about the Thunderbird project, how it's languishing. There have been references to a recent version of Firefox which addressed some serious security concerns. Those concerns allegedly were to be addressed in Mozilla Thunderbird version 2.012, I believe. But as far as I know, the latest version of Thunderbird is still 2.09. So, you know, where's my security updates? Not really promising. Let's hope that the folks at Mozilla Messaging do something good quick. And then from the WTF department, also from the Why Won't You Die, SCO, remember SCO, Santa Cruz Operation, the ones we last spoke about it, my words, I believe, were, ha ha. Yeah, well, I think SCO, I don't know, maybe it's too early for me to have the last laugh. Headline, SCO revives with a $100 million investment. Yeah, SCO, the company that was trying to sue everybody and their brother over Linux, claiming that they owned Linux and it was their intellectual property, etc. Remember them? They're back. Apparently, Stephen Norris Capital Partners and, quote, its capital partners from the Middle East are supplying $100 million, enabling SCO to reorganize and launch a new series of products. And, according to the press release, they're going to continue their intellectual property battle. Isn't that wonderful? Okay, I'm not really a big, zombie movie aficionado, but whoever is the biggest, best, baddest zombie killer of all time, we need this person to come out and, put SCO to rest once and for all. Also making news, last week, Sun bought the virtualization vendor Innotek. The folks over at the VirtualBox project, the company behind that is named Innotek, and that is being bought by Sun Microsystems. You remember the guys who just bought MySQL? Yeah, apparently virtualization is the hot thing. Sun didn't have a virtualization product of their own. Now they do. So let's see. Let's hope that, Innotek gets better. Personally, I hope that their free version, their, free libre and free as in beer version, gets some missing features. Right now, there's a few features that they intentionally leave out of the free version that you have to pay for. I can't remember. I think like USB support and remote desktop connections come to mind. So let's hope that the Sun does something and, opens it up. We've had some pretty good luck with Sun and open source before. They Star Office, Open Office comes to mind. So, let's hope that they do good things with VirtualBox. Also in the corporate world helping open source department, Google has officially announced that they have sponsored Wine improvements, Wine being the application compatibility layer for Linux and other operating systems, which allows you to run Windows programs. Apparently, Google has given a shot in the arm to CodeWeavers and the Wine project, helping to make Photoshop CS and CS2 work better under Wine. Now, obviously, we've been down this road before. We'd prefer to have native Linux applications, but, I've been playing with Wine a lot lately, and it's pretty cool. And, frankly, if in the end you get a fairly seamless experience and your programs just run, hey, I'm not going to be too picky. So, kudos to Google for helping the Wine project. And finally in the news, we have a link to an interview from Lifehacker Australia. Subject title is Lifehacker Australia Interviews Linus Torvalds. So it was an interesting little interview, nothing earth-shattering, but it talked a little bit about his productivity tips and the things he does to stay organized and on top of things. I kind of got a kick out of them. He has a couple of little tidbits, like he hardly uses any GUI applications, just K-Alarm and Firefox. He uses Pine for his email, all text-based emails, keeps everything in one giant inbox, no folders, doesn't carry a cell phone, and hates going to meetings. So I thought that was pretty funny. Anyway, we'll have a link in the show notes so you can read the whole article. It's not very long, kind of entertaining, and again, nothing earth-shattering, but worth reading. That's the news for this week. So next week, Harlem and I expect to be back together again doing the show. But for now, I hope this tides you over. Take care and talk to you next time.
I woke up early in my hotel room, waiting for my alarm to go. I think about the things I've gotta do.
All right, we are gathered here today with an interview, a special interview, actually, with Chad Wallenberg of the Linux Basement podcast, and we actually caught him out in the wild today, an actual Linux user at his desk, I believe. Oh, no, you're in the server room, right?
Well, my desk is in the server room.
There you go, an actual Linux user in the wild in the server room. And thank you for joining me today, Chad.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, you are doing the Linux Basement podcast. When did you decide to get this started?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've mulled over doing different types of podcasts. I was thinking originally of doing a business podcast and just all sorts of stuff. And I just one day decided my first incarnation was the Linux bar, and I was going to do it at my outside bar on my back deck all the time. But it's really cold during the wintertime, so so I, you know, eventually just came up with Linux Basement. It actually, I also have a the website Acoustic Basement, which is where I do some music. So to go along with the whole basement theme, we that's kind of how it all came about.
Oh, that's cool. Well, you can have like a ton of like basement series things then.
That's right. That's right.
Get your acoustic basement going. Are you doing a podcast for that too?
No, it's kind of a private site. A buddy of mine, we used to be in a band together, who lives up in Northern Virginia. I live in Southern Virginia. We kind of coordinate and write music online, and you know, I'll do the guitar part, and then I'll upload it to the website, and then he'll do the bass part and send it back to me, and we kind of coordinate that way. It's pretty cool.
Well, that's a cool way to write music. Have you you know this guy personally, right?
Oh yeah. We used to be roommates. We went to college together.
Oh, okay, cool. Now, what episode are you in on Linux Basement right now?
Just came out with episode 13 this morning.
Oh, okay, I see that. The Security Flugel by Linux Basement, right?
That's right.
Okay, what's on that? What's on that podcast?
Well, we I do a 10 episode series. So we're actually in series 2, and our focus is security. Our first season focus was Drupal, and now we're into security. And I do an interview, actually, with a guy who's at the University of Scotland, a very interesting guy who's studying white hat hacking uh-huh. and security. And I go over, you know, just a bunch of cool stuff, some news, and, you know, we have lots of fun.
Now, what's the difference between white hat hacking and, say, something like black hat hacking?
Blech. Yeah, good question. So, white hat hacking is someone with good intentions. In other words, you are hacking into a network to see maybe what the vulnerabilities are to help someone secure their network or system. Whereas black hat hacking is you want to hack into a box or a network to do harm.
Right. I see. Okay, so we got that straightened out. And it seems like a very interesting episode. So you're on episode 13 already. Is that episode 13 of season 2?
So, no, yeah. So it's actually just episode 13. So every 10 episodes begins a new season. I don't know why I'm being difficult that way. That's just how it seemed to work out.
And so, okay, so the first 10 episodes were on Drupal.
That's right, and these three so far have been on security.
That's actually what drew me to your site to begin with.
Yeah.
I guess Chris in Dallas, that's his handle on Twitter, mentioned you and that you had a bunch of Drupal tutorials, and I checked out your site, and there it was. And so I'm trying to get my own site migrated over to Drupal, but man, it's a tough road to hoe on that one.
Yeah, there's a bit of a learning curve. That's kind of one of the reasons why I started with Drupal. I happen to know a ton about it, and I kind of wanted. I'm not a coder, so I kind of wanted to give back in some way to the community. One thing that kind of separates my podcast to some others, and I'm sure other people do this as well, but I write tutorials that go along with the last portion of my podcast. So every episode, there is a tutorial that goes along with the subject. So I wrote a bunch of tutorials on Drupal and how to get people started, and they're all Ubuntu-specific, actually.
Excellent. Excellent, yeah, and they've been very helpful to me. Somebody also, a gentleman, actually over in the East Coast in North Carolina, sent me the Drupal Pro Drupal Development book. Man, that is a hard subject to get your hands around, you know, and it's actually all a bunch of coding stuff, and so it may not pertain so much to the new Drupal user. But
yeah, great book. The author, Matt Westgate, he actually works for Lullabot, which is a huge consulting firm that does Drupal. And they have a really cool podcast, too, which is the Lullabot podcast. It's all about Drupal. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, I've listened to their podcast and saw a few of their video casts. Very helpful to me, too. You know, I should have started with Drupal, either Drupal or Joomla. I was going to do that when I switched over from my Blogspot account to WordPress. And
yeah.
I'm now doing a self-hosted WordPress, and I should have started out with one of the CMSs there. And, you know, by now I would have it down, but unfortunately, I didn't.
Yeah, well, you know, WordPress is cool, too. And I actually did do one episode on just a quick, you know, here's how to install WordPress if you want to try it out. I use WordPress for my blog, and it's a great thing. Drupal just has a little more flexibility. What I like to think that I've actually built a community around the Linux Basement website, not just a podcast website, which is kind of cool.
Exactly, and that's what we're trying to do here at Fresh Ubuntu, some kind of community site. So,
yeah.
So now you are now in a security series. What is going to be your next series?
Yeah, that's up to debate, and a lot of times I'll poll the people. I got this IRC chat. I know you joined the other day, which is cool.
Yeah.
Got a lot of really good guys in there who give me lots of good suggestions, and I usually ask on the forums and what people are interested in. I'm leaning towards either Asterisk, which is a big, voice over IP, open source voice over IP.
That's right.
Or right now I'm leaning towards Asterisk. It's something I know a lot about, and I try to coordinate my work life with my podcast. So yeah. I'm going to be working on some Asterisk stuff coming up in the near future here. I happen to have a decent amount of experience with, so I kind of want to share that with the Linux Basement users. Yeah.
Cool. You are kind of in a different situation than many other podcasters because, you know, like some folks, employees or employers in general don't like people blogging about work. And
yeah.
You're kind of in a neat situation where you can.
Yeah, it's kind of a two-way thing. I can actually talk more about work on your podcast than I can on mine.
Oh, yeah.
I try to keep it as generic as possible, but I don't mind telling people, you know, what I do or who I am or what I'm doing at work, but I don't get too specific on exactly how I implement things at work. Like, I won't give you exactly what the IP address is on the servers that I'm running my web servers or things like that, you know.
That wouldn't be a smart thing to do.
I do work in education, and I like to think that education needs to be quite a bit more open with their information.
Yeah. So you work for a university?
So I'm actually the network manager for a K-12 here in Southern Virginia.
Oh, excellent.
So, we've got I work for the county school system. We've got 12 locations, 2,500 computers, about 5,000 users. It's a pretty big network.
Wow.
Yeah.
Any chance you guys are going to pick up some EEE PCs?
So I've got one. And they were kind enough to buy me one. I'm testing it out. you heard earlier, So the first thing, what did I do? I tried Zandros out for about 2 hours and then completely wiped the thing away and on Zubuntu. And that is why I'm having some mic issues. I never configured it properly, and I never actually tested it out. So.
Now, okay, so the guy in Italy, Cafe Ninja, Emmett Stewart,
yeah.
The guy I interviewed last week, and you guys may have heard.
Interview.
Thank you. He started out with the EEE-specific Zubuntu distro, and he found that there were some issues on it that he couldn't get working, so he switched over to the regular Ubuntu distro, and it seems to work fine. In fact, I don't know if you heard on the podcast, he was using the default microphone without, you know, the little tiny microphone underneath the computer.
That amazes me, because he sounded so clear.
He did, and I was very amazed by that, and that blew me away, and I didn't realize a microphone, especially a built-in mic, could...
Do you know if... Was he on the Zandros, or was he on Ubuntu?
I think he was saying he was on the Ubuntu.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to do that then.
Yeah, and he's got it on a 8-gigabyte key drive, so he can boot into Zandros by just taking the key drive out, but...
Yeah, that's a great idea. I know a lot of people don't think that it's really restrictive having that 4 gigs, but I'm one of those guys because I'm, you know, in IT administration. I carry around a 120 gig USB drive wherever I go. So it's really cool because I can just plug that thing in and rock and roll. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've been testing out the EEE PC and you like it so far, or?
Love it. Absolutely love it. I'm in a weird predicament here because I do work on a 97% Windows network here. So I'm always looking for opportunities to introduce more more Linux into mm-hmm. the system. Unfortunately, I'm in the second poorest county in Virginia. Mm-hmm. You can look it up. So what happens is we get a lot of assistance money from state and federal government. And the reason we get that money is for online testing.
Right.
So we have to be able to host that online testing application on our computers. And guess what? Windows specific.
Right.
So we're kind of locked in because of the money that we get to Windows. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Right.
So I'm trying to work through that and find ways where we can get around it and start running more Linux here.
Well, cool. You know, it's a grassroots kind of effort, and I think that's what we all are kind of doing, you know, with podcasting and blogging and that kind of stuff. So
that's right.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, I don't think, you know, I don't know if Linux is in the position, or even Ubuntu is in the position to battle on the top levels of the corporate, you know, world, but definitely for sure from the grassroots side. So.
Yeah, I tend to believe that education is the perfect place for Ubuntu specifically.
Yeah.
And last Friday I taught a class to the seniors here at the high school who are moving on to computer science and engineering, all about Linux. And it's funny because none of them really had any clue what Linux really was. And these are kids that are going to go to college and work on Linux boxes doing computer science and engineering. So I try to go in and give them a little heads up. But the amazing thing is these kids immediately adapt to the Linux desktop. Immediately.
Wow.
They've already got the applications that they need. You know, half these guys all they're using is AOL Instant Messenger, which they've got in game. They've got their Google Apps or OpenOffice, which, you know, stands alone, and Firefox.
Exactly.
And that's all these kids use.
and really, that's what all, you know, basically average users use. So.
I mean, when I log into my Ubuntu box, I fire up Firefox and the terminal. That's it.
Exactly. I check my email and get on the internet, basically. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's great. You're right. And, you know, Apple has been doing that for years. They were one of the first to exploit the educational market. So it's a good venue for it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so did you hear about 8.10, the next Ubuntu distro, or the next edition of Ubuntu after Hardy Heron?
No, I have not.
Oh, okay. Well, so this is going to be brand new to you. They have a name for it already, and it's going to be called... the Intrepid Ibex, and this was on the list at list.ubuntu.com, the listserv out there, and they had just named it yesterday, so that's going to be in the cycle for October in 2008. Intrepid Ibex, you'll probably hear a ton about it as soon as Hardy Heron is released, so...
Yet another wonderful name.
I know. Where did they come up with these things?
I'm telling you, it's got to be a committee.
Crazy committee. Probably the desktop interface committee or something. I don't know. The color scheme committee. I don't know. So,
I'm just pleased because that'll come out at my birthday, so that's what I'll be doing.
Oh, sweet. Excellent. Yeah. That's Intrepid Ibex. So, yeah, that came out yesterday. I don't know if any of your... If you haven't heard of it, then I'm sure the general population still hasn't heard of it yet. But it is going to be coming out. Go ahead.
Good. I'm excited. I'm really excited about Hardy Heron. I love Ubuntu. I run it on my desktop at work, desktop at home, my laptop, everything. So good times.
I know. I love. I can't wait till Hardy Heron comes out. That's going to be awesome. It's going to be a nice long-term release, or, you know, long-term support release, and it should be pretty stable.
Yeah, exactly. And it's perfect timing for me because I've got several server deployments I'm just ready to do, and I'm going to hold out just for that long-term support.
Yeah. So your servers are running, or actually your personal servers are running the Dapper, right?
Yeah, we can talk about that a little bit. I've got a crazy setup. I've got a server that runs VMware server. Mm-hmm. So it's actually Feisty Fawn server running VMware server that has multiple Gutsy servers on top of it, which is how I host all sorts of websites. I've got about 25 websites now that we're running off those platforms, and it's kind of cool.
Oh, cool. Man, it's, talk about spaghetti code there.
I'm telling you. Yeah, the VMware, I for some reason got into VMware Server rather than Xen. I'm kind of hoping that I can learn more about Xen in the future. But VMware Server runs really nice sitting on top of Ubuntu, from what I've found.
Yeah, that's what I hear too. A lot of people are really satisfied with VMware, so
yeah.
no need to change so quickly, I think.
Sure. Also, they've been good to me.
Yeah, they have. They've been good to a lot of people. I am trying to set my own VMware virtual machines on my own Ubuntu laptop, but it's taking me a little while. So, did you hear about that? Canonical might be holding a repository or making a repository with commercial software on there.
Yeah, you know, I see that being discussed a lot on the RSS feeds for Ubuntu and things. I'm all for it. I say the more the merrier. I mean, you have the option to use that software. You do not have to, and I think we need proprietary software on the Ubuntu platform so that more people come aboard, to be honest.
I agree with you, and I don't think there should be much debate about it. There's got to be a way that folks like Adobe, folks like even Apple, be able to get their stuff on Linux machines, and you know, why the
Absolutely.
Heck not? You know,
I mean, I understand the purists want it all just, you know, clean and open source, but we've got to fight the battle. We need more people, so
that's right.
Keep them happy with Adobe
for a little while until the other ones catch up, and it shouldn't be too much longer. You know, and sure. On top of that, Google has been doing some work with their Wine improvements. I don't know if you heard about that, but
Google Code Weavers.
Yes, that's right, Code Weavers. They've been getting Adobe stuff on there, Photoshop, CS1 and CS2, ported over to Wine, and that seems to be a nice little stopgap for now. And I was reading the article on ARS Technica. They were the folks at Wine were saying that most Linux users would prefer to see native open source alternatives to commercial products, but Wine is filling a need for now. So I think it's going to go that way with the proprietary software coming to all the distros. So.
Yeah, I think they're spot on. And the fact that Google is pushing something like that, Adobe's going to take notice. And I think we're going to see native support within the future here. It's a good first step.
Yeah, it is. It is. So.
Yeah.
Have you heard of And Linux?
ANLINUX.
Well,
no.
for those listeners who are still running Windows, you can run Ubuntu in Windows using And Linux, and the website is andlinux.org. And it's a full Ubuntu distro running seamlessly in Windows and Windows 2000-based systems, i.e. XP, Vista, and it's only on the 32-bit Vista. So, I haven't checked it out yet, but it looks pretty interesting, and it's one of those... Just as an aside, it was just a trivial little thing that I saw on some list. I forgot, but...
Yeah.
There's so much information on
it. Thousands of RSS feeds. Yeah.
So what's the future of Linux Basement, and what do you got in mind?
Oh, man, the future of Linux Basement. You know, I'm, we're... a pretty happy little community right now. I've got some really, really good people that hang out all the time in IRC and on the forums and help people out. And that's exactly what I wanted to do when I created it. I just wanted to get a nice, good, hardcore group of people to help people out. Because, you know, like I was saying before, I'm not a coder. I can't submit a bunch of code back to the projects and things like that. So this is kind of the way to, you know, help everybody out. So the future of Linux Basement is we're going to keep on podcasting. I have a goal of 100 episodes, 10 seasons, and try to get as much good information to help people migrate to Linux and become more advanced Linux users. I mean, that's what we want to do. And just keep growing the community, you know?
Yep. You have a co-host too, right?
I do, kind of, sort of. I have a great guy named Peter Halliburton who does the news. He does a short news segment with me, and he also co-hosts the interview section. So we get together on TalkShoe and do tag team interviewing. I'm in an interesting situation. I live out here in the sticks, so I'm on dial-up.
Yeah, that amazed me.
Yeah, so I'm not right now, obviously, I'm at work. Right. But at home, I can't co-host with him, which I do most of my recording at home, well, or all of it, really. We can't actually interact in most of the episode. But so he does the news and sends it to me, and then we use TalkShoe. I can actually call on my regular phone to do the interview. So it's an interesting dynamic.
Okay, so yeah, I tried to do a talk show for a while, and
yeah,
I think last year sometime I tried to get a talk show episode going, but kind of nobody showed up, and I didn't really, you know, advertise it very well.
Yeah,
but it seems to have changed quite a bit. You can now call in through your phone and utilize talk show, right?
Yeah, that's how I have to do it, because I can't use Skype, and I wouldn't be able to use SIP. So I actually call him on my cell phone, and then Pete calls in using SIP, and then our guests usually also use some kind of SIP phone. Like the guy in Scotland, he wouldn't be able to use his regular phone because it would have been massively long distance.
Right.
So he just used a SIP phone, like a Kiga.
Yep. And that's what happened to me for a long time. They don't have a Linux client, for one thing, so I couldn't. And if I did have to do it, I would have
to
use my Windows machine, you know.
And that's right. I had heard people talking about that. So, yeah, it has changed since then.
Yeah. So, but I saw now, I was on there the past couple of days, and I've seen that there were a ton of Linux-based kind of programming. So things might have changed a bit, and I think I might look at that one more time and see if I can't get an audience for a future podcast.
Yeah, it's got some really interesting potential, because you can, you know, we could have a Linux roundtable, and you could literally have 10 people at the same time in this talk show room, which is kind of interesting. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I think I sent them a letter. I'm pressing them for a Linux client, but and they promised one last year, but.
I'm happy that they're supporting SIP now, because everyone can get the Akiga phone, pretty much every distribution, and then you can call in via SIP, so that's cool.
Yeah. Well, then I'm going to have to give that a try again. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you got anything else for us, Chad?
I just wanted to say something I didn't mention, and if anyone's interested, I do make it available if anyone wants to head over to the Linux Basement website. I have a spot where people can basically create their own user articles or tutorials, and I did that just in case people aren't comfortable with blogging, but they find something that's cool, they can actually just post it up there. We try to add you know, cool little features that for the users if anybody wants to check it out. And so I actually have a pretty decent group of tutorials and stuff that if anybody wants to check out, and maybe it'll help you with some of your problems. But listen, man, I listen to your show all the time, and I really appreciate you inviting me to come on, and I just love the show, and I keep up the great work.
Thanks, Chad. We're gonna try and keep up the great work, and thank you guys for having your site up and running. It's at linuxbasement.com, linuxbasement.com.
That's correct.
And
they can also hop by and talk to me. I'm in the IRC chat almost all the time at irc.freenode.net/linuxbasement.
Excellent. Yeah, I've been on there and talked to a bunch of guys. I think there were about seven or eight guys in there.
Yeah, it stays relatively busy almost all the time.
Does it?
Yeah,
it's sweet. Pretty cool. I should stop by more often.
Yeah. So,
thank you very much, Chad, for joining us this week. Chad from the Linux Basement at linuxbasement.com. Stop by his website and check out the tutorials. Most of all, subscribe to his podcast. He's got an MP3 feed and an Ogg Vorbis feed. You can do that through iTunes or directly from the site at linuxbasement.com. Chad, thank you very much for joining me, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Harlem. Take care.
Welcome to the Man Page Minute. This week we are starting a new section on file management. Previously we've covered how to navigate the file system. Now we're going to cover how to do things with it, how to maintain your files. And the first command that we're going to copy today is CP. CP is short for copy. And in its most simple form, the syntax is CP space source file space destination. And the source file would be the original file, and the destination is going to be either a new name for the file or a new destination. If you give a destination a second argument of just a new name, then CP will make a copy of that file and just give it a new name. So for instance, if you say CP file 1 space file 2, what you'll end up with is two copies of the same file, one named file 1, one named file 2. But alternately, if you just want to make a copy and put it somewhere else, for instance, if you wanted to copy it to a flash drive or to a network share, you would say CP space file 1 space and then the path to where you want the copy to go. So for instance, CP space file 1 space slash media slash USB. What that would do is take a copy of your file 1 and put it into whatever was mounted at slash media slash USB. Now here's an important note when copying files. If there is nothing mounted there and that directory does not exist, then what you have just done is made a copy of the file called USB and placed it in the directory slash media. So be careful when you're specifying a destination. You want to make sure that if you're specifying a destination, that it actually does exist and it is mounted. Otherwise, you might be in for a surprise. Now, a couple of useful command line switches. There are lots of them. Ones that I use frequently are force. Force will force an overwrite of files. So if you have file 1 or file 2 already existing and you're trying to copy file 1 to it, it'll overwrite it. R for recursive. What that can do is if you specify a directory, it will go through and recursively copy all the contents of that. V stands for verbose, which actually shows you what's being done. In typical Unix fashion, if you don't specify this, the copy operation is silent unless it has an error. Update will only copy the source file if it is newer than the destination. This is good if you want to do, make sure you have a somewhat synchronized directory structure. So for instance, I will frequently, if I want to copy, a whole bunch of files and just have a current backup, I will do cp-fuvr. Which basically says overwrite whatever you find, but only if it's newer, and it recurses into the directory and does so verbosely so I can see what's going on. As with all the man page minutes we cover, there's a lot more info if you want to just look it up. Remember, you can always just do a man space CP to look up the copy command.
Hey Harlem, hey Peter, this is Nightwise calling from the Nightcast with my review of the Asus EEE PC. With great interest, I listened to your review of the Asus EEE PC a few weeks ago, and thanks to the transatlantic cooperation between the Nightcast and Fresh Ubuntu, I managed to bring you my side of that story. I got the Asus EEE PC a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago or something, and I've been using it, and I thought it was time for a little review. I'll go through the several points and give you a short take on what I think of it. First of all, speed and memory. Well, if you look at the Asus EE PC, it's actually pretty fast. The 900 MHz processor is, well, not a killer machine, but you don't do desktop apps on this baby now, do you? With 512 megs of RAM under the bonnet, and the ability to, you know, just unscrew that little screw and add another stick of RAM, I think the speed will increase even more. I haven't noticed any moments when I use it that I thought, like, nah, this thing is lagging, and I haven't even gotten down to installing that extra stick of RAM and upgrading the memory from 512 megs to a gigabyte. So as for speed, no, it's not a desktop killer, but it's very convenient for what you have to do with it. The operating system. The operating system that it ships with, you know, the very easy big button interface, is nice, but it actually does not do the machine justice. It makes it seem very simple and very simplified to use, that is true, but it also looks like that's all that the machine can do. Well, again, it's not. If you go on the internet and you look around a little bit, you'll find a way to boot it into what's called full desktop mode. And then this baby sports a full Xandros Linux distribution with a KDE interface. This is the first version of Linux that is portable, that I have with me all the time, that is not installed on some desktop. No, no, this is tiny, tiny, small, ultra portable, and it sports one of the most powerful operating systems on the planet, Linux. I'm a bit disappointed with Xandros Linux in the sense that, you know, I would have liked Ubuntu on there, and it's possible to do that. And I'm going to see if I can get into that and see if I can install Ubuntu on there once I'm a little bit more advanced in using it. But Xandros is a Debian-based distribution, and they support apt-get. So looking around and adding the official Xandros repositories to the apt-get sources list does make for a great big bag of software where you can just pull out all kinds of things from. Just to give you an example, I've pulled up Wireshark, I've pulled up Nmap, I've pulled up VLC, making it actually the most powerful war driving machine that I have today, and it is really convenient to do so. The KDE interface, to me, I'm not a big KDE fan, because I think that KDE is a little bit too cluttered. I would have liked GNOME on there, and perhaps I'll just put it on there, because that's the modularity of Linux that is so cool. But as for use, I've managed to trim down the KDE a little bit so it really does the small screen justice, and it works pretty darn fine. The screen, not too big, but very bright and very clear. I do have problems clicking on buttons that are out of the screen resolution and that, you know, are outside of the screen boundaries. You don't have a lot of screen real estate, but just clicking Alt and then dragging that window to where you want to have it does the trick just fine. Wireless. Wireless on this baby is the bomb, dudes. Really, really good. It's very easy to configure. It's very easy to look for other networks and hook up to them. It will remember the settings. You get a list of all the networks you connected to. It is absolutely awesome. I have never, ever connected to a wireless network as easy as with this little triple EPC in any of the Linux machines that I've owned. Really, really good. And the wireless connectivity is good, reception is good. I've managed the war drives in places you wouldn't believe. And whenever I use the Asus triple EPC, I can almost be sure that there is somewhere that I can hook up to an open network and thus have internet connectivity. The sound is a little bit on the tinny side, but it's good enough to listen to some music. The webcam, I haven't used the webcam yet. What I think is cool is that there's Skype on there, so that's pretty cool. You have webcam support in Skype. But I haven't found an application like, what's it called on the Mac, Photo Booth, where you can just easily take pictures and email them around. But all in all, the operating system is pretty good, very good actually. The wireless connectivity is fantastic. This speed is good enough for what it does, and here is the kicker. You have to think of what it does. What do you want to do with it? This is not a desktop replacement. This is not a full-fledged, powerful laptop. This is not a killer machine. This is not the next Quake 3 server for 5,000 people to play on. This is an ultra portable device, and that is where the beauty lies. I am now able to carry around a computer with me everywhere. I have a little messenger bag that I take along with me everywhere that has my cell phone in there and my iRiver and stuff and my wallet. And now, finally, without having to sport a laptop bag, I can just slide the Asus right into there. It comes in this little neoprene case that is a little bit stretchable, so you can put all kinds of other stuff in there, and you have a very, very nice bag that you can carry with you. The portability to me is the killer app and the killer feature for the Triple E PC. Battery life is good, no problems there. Speed is good enough, no problem there. The keyboard isn't really suited for writing the next American novel. However, I have been typing on it and working on my own Star Trek fan fiction novel, and to me, it doesn't type as fast, but it gives me the time to really think about what I want to write, and I just have to tap out the words on the keyboard. It's a QWERTY keyboard, and I'm used to a XERTY here in Europe, so that's a little bit of getting used to. But all in all, I mean, it takes some concentrated typing, a little bit more focused, but to me, it's very good. But the portability does it all. Now you have a low-budget device that you can carry around with you anywhere. It sports one of the greatest operating systems on the planet, Linux. It gives you wireless connectivity, you have a webcam, you have speakers, and it only costs about $400. So I don't know why this would get any bad reviews, at least not from me. I'm very pleased with it. I love using it, and to me, it is the ultimate PDA on steroids. It's the midgetized version of my notebook. It gives me internet connectivity, email, chat, access to the cloud. It gives me open office on all kinds of applications, and of course, it gives me the terminal. To me, the Asus Triple E PC is just like FreshUbuntu. It gets a 2 thumbs up.
Hey, well, that was a show, and we just want to thank you very much for joining us this week. I know this podcast is getting out a little bit late, and just because my motivation level is a little bit low this week. So, anyway, they just sung Elvis on Chocolat, so I think I'm gonna watch the rest of it. But thank you very much for joining us this week. The music this week was provided by a different source, and this was all either donated music from Scott, that the one piece that you saw, that you heard at the beginning, but the rest of the music was provided by the Internet Archive, and it was part of their open source audio library, and lots of good stuff on there. And so we were, at least I was checking stuff out, and found a few good things. So anyway, that was the show. Thanks very much to Peter, to Chad, for joining us for the interview. I know he had to take some time off of work. And also to Nightwise, who did an excellent review of the Asus. Getting a lot of press, and it's still getting a lot of press nowadays. So anyway, if you have email for us, send it to me at harlem@freshubuntu.org, and if you have email for Peter, you can also send that to Peter, P-E-T-E-R, at freshubuntu.org. Nightwise has his own Nightwise has his own podcast. It's called The Nightcast, on the edge of real and cyberspace. Check him out at nightwise.com. And last but not least, Chad Wallenberg's Linux Basement podcast at linuxbasement.com. Check out his IRC channel at @linuxbasement, and you might see me there every now and again. So anyway, thanks for joining us, and have a great week, and I'll talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye.